go ahead and finish strong on a full send Friday. What's happening? Welcome in to 104.5 The Zone. So happy to have you guys along for the ride for the next 3 hours. It's going to be a hell of a ride with all of the guests and content that we have prepared for you today. We are going to have King John Reed coming up next, and we'll talk about the Vols headed to the Swamp. Chris Sanders, Titans and Oilers wide receiving great, will be here at 11:20 because it's homecoming week at Nissan Stadium. And then, after the homecoming, a game will be played. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio will break it down with us between the Titans and the Colts on Sunday in this Week 3 matchup. A lot of things to discuss, a lot of ground to cover, a lot of calls to take. If you want to get involved, 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. So I want to start with Thursday Night Football because there was so much from that game, and I'm going to tie it into a locally centric topic because, one, I talked about how yesterday I'm really enjoying the Panthers as like my side team. You know, you got a main chick and a side chick, but you shouldn't. The main chick for most of you is the Titans. The side chick for some of you, you know, it could be Tom Brady. It could be John Gruden and the Las Vegas Raiders. And it may very well be the Carolina Panthers for me. I very much enjoyed watching them to this 3-0 start. And I thought it was interesting the way that they won that game, a game that the Titans would have liked for them to win, given that they were playing the AFC South rival Houston Texans. Now the Texans go down to 1-2. You have the opportunity to put the Colts in an 0-3 hole. You're feeling pretty good about where you are and how you stack up against the rest of the AFC South, if you didn't already. But outside of the Panthers and their 3-0 start and that game on Thursday Night Football, I think the story of the game was the second quarter, right? When Christian McCaffrey is getting ready to, well, takes the handoff, and in fact, we have the call from Fox, or I guess NFL Network, depending on where you watched the game last night, of the play in the second quarter when Christian McCaffrey came up lame.
News coming from Carolina's blue tent, not good, and you'll see it right here. Christian McCaffrey, guys, is out of this game with a hamstring injury. Just awful news, considering we heard from Joe Brady.
So that's Aaron Andrews on the sideline last night on the NFL Network / Fox broadcast with the Fox broadcast crew. Christian McCaffrey in the second quarter. Something happens to his hamstring. You can tell immediately with the way that he kind of pulls up mid gallop, basically. He goes into the blue tent, and he's probably in there for 20 minutes. Like, it was a while that he was sitting out there, and it wasn't even that they took that full 20 minutes to rule him out. No, it was fairly immediate. So it seems like Christian McCaffrey is going to miss some kind of substantial time for Carolina, and this has been the story of Christian McCaffrey, right? This is why so many people, including myself, at that position, fear a second contract. And then immediately, I thought about Derrick Henry. Because Derrick Henry, as one of these second contract running backs, the best thing about him is his durability. I tweeted that out, and people lost their minds. Lost their minds, telling me to shut the hell up, that I'm going to jinx Derrick Henry from becoming injured just because I've mentioned how durable he's been and how not durable or not long-lasting these second contract running backs like Zeke or Kamara to a degree, Christian McCaffrey on the extremes. Like, most of these dudes don't live up to their second contract. And then there's Derrick, which is the best. One of the best things about Derrick Henry is the fact that he's available. It allows him to rush for 2,000 yards because he'll play in all 16 games, now 17. We'll see how they manage him and how they can keep him healthy. But the most wondrous thing about the Derrick Henry experience is that playing football affects these other guys. It does not seem to have a tangential effect, a substantive effect, on the Titans running back. It's what makes him a cyborg. Because even I'm sitting there in the press conference room after Seattle, right? And the Titans have a great comeback. They win in overtime. We've talked about it all week long. And so we await the selected players that they're going to bring to the podium to speak with us after the game, because we don't have locker room access anymore with the COVID protocols. That's fine. So we're awaiting the players that they're bringing to the podium. Now, they come out with Mike Vrabel first. Then we go to Kevin Byard. Then Randy Bullock comes into the room, and we are all confused as to who this individual is because it's the first time we're seeing his face. And then Ryan Tannehill comes to the podium. Now, Ryan Tannehill did not get sacked in week two the way that he did in week one, right? There were three sacks, which is reasonable as opposed to six, and Chandler Jones having five of them against the Cardinals. But after three sacks and a forced fumble, a strip sack, where he and a play where he just gets cleaned off his feet by Bobby Wagner because nobody picks him up on a blitz, Ryan Tannehill kind of lets out this groan as he gets up off the wall to come to the podium. Understandably so. It's a ridiculously violent sport. And then there's Derrick Henry, who never once shows any sign of soreness, and we don't know what he's feeling after a game, and I'm sure it's a much different experience than what he lets on, but Derrick doesn't miss time. The only time that Derrick Henry has missed a game since becoming the full-time starter was the 2019 season, if I recall. It was a week 16 game against the New Orleans Saints, and it was the rare game where it mattered none for either team to win or to lose that game based on how late it was in the season and the lack of impact across conference games. And it was something that they could afford to sit Derrick Henry, and they almost won that game if it had not been for a non-call on, I can't remember the DB who just, I think he concussed Khalif Raymond, forced a fumble, and that allowed the Saints to take over while the Titans were getting ready to drive for one of these Ryan Tannehill game-winning drives that they tend to do at least 10 times in the last couple of years. But what makes Derrick so remarkable is that the availability is unprecedented for a player at that position. And I don't know how long it lasts, right? We don't know when the drop-off is coming for any of these professional athletes. We just know that once it happens, it's clear and obvious to anybody. That's why Derrick Henry and people like Tom Brady at his age playing quarterback are such anomalies, because you wait and wait and wait for it to happen, and it just doesn't seem to go. Now, there's obviously a big difference in age between Derrick and Tom, but you understand my point, given how much more violent and how much more physical the playing of running back is. So for those people who would be concerned, just because we're talking about it on the air, that would immediately lead Derrick Henry to be jinxed because of injury, it matters not what we're saying about it. It matters that he's able to do it and that he's done it to this point, and that I'm curious to see just how much longer Derrick Henry can stiff-arm football, the physicality, the wear, the tear, the sapping of your athleticism that seems to happen in this sport. Keep stiff-arming football and its effects the way that he stiff-arms Josh Norman by physically picking it up and throwing it away from him. Because it's just the way that he plays. 615-737-1045 is how you guys get in on the conversation over the course of today. Outside of that, I was fascinated by Sam Darnold, because they did struggle after McCaffrey went down. Their offense kind of took a dip. They were moving pretty much at ease against the Texans, and that defense is nasty, by the way. Brian Burns is just a freak coming off the edge. They have a lot of really, really talented front seven players in Carolina, and one of them, by the way, is Daquan Jones, who's had a pretty good season to start so far. But with Sam Darnold, you know, he's one of these first-round picks at quarterback. In fact, he was the third overall pick at quarterback not that long ago, and he's already on his second team. And his first team, he was drafted by – was he drafted by Adam Gase? I can't remember if he was drafted by Adam Gase or if Adam Gase came in after Sam Darnold. I think that Adam Gase was on the staff that drafted Sam Darnold, if I recall correctly. Regardless, Adam Gase is fired, and Sam Darnold looks like a hell of a lot better quarterback now that he's gotten out from under Adam Gase's clutches. We put this on a poll on Twitter. Is Adam Gase the most toxic coach in all of the NFL? Because I saw a Kevin Clark tweet last night that says, you think the Gase thing is funny, is a funny little meme, because Ryan Tannehill and Sam Darnold improved after Adam Gase, and because the Broncos won the Super Bowl immediately after Adam Gase left. Then you see he left LSU after 2002, and they won the national title in 2003. Then you realize how deep it goes. His tweet goes on to say, I regret to inform you that this is not a joke, that Adam Gase's Michigan High School, Marshall, won the state title in the first season after his 1996 graduation. Adam Gase is toxic to NFL quarterback play across college, across high school, and across the pros. And I'm certain that we can all look at Sam Darnold, Ryan Tannehill, and all the other things that Adam Gase has come into contact with, even Peyton Manning, and say, you know what? There's probably a reason that he shouldn't be getting any more jobs, even if Peyton Manning is the one who helped him get the Jets job. That is one of the most ridiculous trends that I've ever seen in football coaching.
He's the anti-Tom Brady.
Wait, Brady just wins in every
everywhere
city?
Brady grew up in San Francisco when there were winning Super Bowls. He went to Michigan winning a national championship. He goes to New England. He goes to Tampa Bay. And it's not just the teams he plays for. It's the teams around him, too, just in the vicinity of where he lives, the Red Sox in Boston.
The Bruins.
Tampa Bay, the Lightning, yeah. Winning the Stanley Cup. Tom Brady wins championships, follow Tom Brady. Heartbreak and loss follows Adam Gase on the field.
Championships winning, covered in glory is Tom Brady, yes. In every city that he is born into or deigns to grace himself upon. Whereas Adam Gase is just this black cloud of suffering and ruination of quarterback play.
He did not draft Darnold, though.
He did, that's what I thought.
He took over in 2019. Darnold was drafted in 18. I don't remember who he replaced at the Jets.
Wasn't it my guy who's like 110. He's Fitzpatrick before Fitzpatrick. You know who I'm talking about. He's got a brother that was a backup quarterback for the Saints for a while.
Oh, it was Todd Bowles.
No, not. You're talking about head coach.
I was saying who was the head coach of the Jets. It was Todd Bowles that drafted Darnold.
Yeah, and Todd Bowles seems wildly more competent at what it is that he is supposed to do as opposed to Adam Gase. In fact, Todd Bowles seemed to be keeping what was a disaster with the Jets afloat a lot longer than it deserved, and then Adam Gase just comes in and urinates all over everything. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved in the conversation. King John Reed is going to join us coming up next, but first we'll go to Bill, who's in Spring Hill and wants to talk about Derrick Henry. What's up, Bill?
How y'all doing today?
We're great, buddy.
Beautiful day in Middle Tennessee. Hey, man, real quick on the Derrick Henry issue. I mean, this guy is, he's physically built. He is a very strong running back. Everybody knows that. Not too many people want to go up against him head-to-head and try to do a straight tackle with him because they know what's fixing to happen to him. But he is only as good as his offensive line that can create those seams for him to get through. But he also has the ability to see when the seam closes up and then move on, take another route. And boom, what does he do? He takes another route. All right, that's it, guys. I'm going to listen to you. We'll see you later.
Hey, thanks for the call, Bill. 615-737-1045. No, in fact, I think that Derrick Henry's offensive line, and this is, I don't want to do this, right, where we have the Tannehill versus Henry, who matters more for the Titans offense conversation. I don't want to do the who matters more for the Titans running game conversation between the offensive line and Derrick Henry, even though I think it's vastly more Derrick Henry, because I don't want to take away credit from those guys who are executing what they're asked or trying to execute what they ask. The difference is if they screw up their blocking assignments, Derrick can still cut it for a big one because he's a monster, because he is a game-changing player, and it's rare that we see that at the running back position in the league right now. When we come back, we'll talk about what's going to be rare for the Tennessee Vols. A competitive game in Florida would be a rarity. It would be a pleasant surprise. It's not being predicted by anywhere that you look at gambling lines or point spreads or things of this nature. They are an 18.5 point dog in the swamp right now, last I looked at DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, that line has moved up a little bit, and I'm not sure why, just because it's not really clear who's going to start at quarterback, although you'll hear from Josh Heupel as well and kind of see how they've handled that position throughout the course of the week. We'll talk about it with John Reed of Fox Sports Knoxville coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Okay, let's do it. Fridays mean Vols talk. They mean a weekly visit from our friend, the King, John Reed, Fox Sports Knoxville. Now, this is a precarious position, Reed, because this conversation may be the last that we have without you know, the doom and gloom of an SEC schedule hanging over our heads. How are you feeling today heading into the Swamp tomorrow?
So wait, just for the record, you think the doom and gloom hasn't already started?
I think that it's a little lighter than it might otherwise be when next we speak.
I mean, there's not much more in my life, Buck, that brings me dread than Florida week. So, no, next week when we talk and this is all over and we're looking ahead to Missouri, I'll be in a much more optimistic, much happier mood. No, Florida week brings out the worst in a lot of us, including myself.
I respect that. Now, tell me, Reed, do you gamble on Vols games just in principle, not necessarily the Florida game?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I don't always take Tennessee, but I don't like stay away from them.
No, I understand. I just didn't know if that added that, if that exacerbated what pain you're being caused by this particular franchise.
No, I mean, sometimes it does, but sometimes it makes me feel alive. Like the actual pain when your team loses and loses money. That's really the best part about gambling, when you don't want to get out of bed or you have to go take an hour and a half shower to wash it off. That's what I know I'm living. Like that drive home from Nashville after the Cardinal game, one, you know, was devastating and soul crushing, but also reminded me that I was alive.
Well, you know, whatever gets you through the day, buddy. John Reed, John double underscore Reed here with us. Fox Sports Knoxville is where you can hear him on a regular basis. Okay, which quarterback gives them the best chance? Because it sounds like it's still going to be Hooker based on what Heupel has said throughout the course of this week. Do you think that's the best option if they're both right?
Are we talking about best option to win or best option to not get embarrassed?
Best because option for you to cover 18.5 points.
The best option to cover is probably Hendon Hooker. The best option to win is, you know, putting Joe Milton in there and praying he hits a couple of deep balls finally, because, you know, I think the ceiling is higher with Joe Milton. We've kind of talked about that for a while. And the floor is also much lower with Joe Milton when he's overthrowing everyone and not being able to hit open passes. On the flip side, I think Milton, you know, or excuse me, with Hooker, you saw last week, he's not much better on the deep ball, but you'll always take an underthrow on the deep ball where the receiver can adjust and come back and try to catch it versus it sailing 8 yards over his head. I just think Milton has much more, you know, bigger play potential, and Tennessee probably has to hit some big plays to have a chance of beating Florida this weekend.
Is there a chance? I mean, like, if we're speaking truth to power, do you honestly believe there's a chance that they can give Florida a game, much less beat them?
Yeah, no, I do think Tennessee can give Florida a game. Now, beat them, probably not. But I do think we underestimate emotion in college athletics. I mean, when we break down the games, when you're watching it, you see the emotion, you see the atmosphere, you see the players' hype. Like, all of that is stuff we look at after the fact and acknowledge. But before that, heading into the game, we don't talk about it as much. And I just think it's going to be tough for Florida to get up at the same level. Tennessee should probably be up for this game, you know, based off of last week and, you know, playing Alabama the week before.
No, and I think we talked about that on Monday after, or maybe Tuesday, a couple days after the game, just kind of, you know, being interested in how much, if at all, the SEC kind of, or really even college football kind of opens up a little more, just because Alabama looked mortal for three quarters and Florida was a big part of the reason why. From my standpoint, I completely buy into the idea that it would be difficult for Florida to match that kind of intensity and for Tennessee to kind of capitalize on what could be just a little bit of, frankly, of exhaustion, because there was, I mean, that was one of the most interesting results of the weekend, Reed. Even though Alabama won again, as they always do, it was interesting to see the way that Mullen was able to exploit them on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't know whether that's something that you can kind of coach your kids up again to do when you know that the opponent, when you're going in thinking that the opponent is inferior. I'm just running through this through the Titans prism because I've seen it a million times.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. And, like, don't get me wrong, Florida is much better than Tennessee, especially with the way they played against them. But can you get that every week? And for the most part, you can't. Like, only a couple coaches can. Nick Saban even has some sleepwalking. So, you know, that's Tennessee's best shot for not only the players to be a little lethargic, but also the, you know, the fans inside of the Swamp. You saw Dan Mullen talking about how, you know, he would get on the mic and sing or dance if he had to get people in the stands. So, you know, there's probably not a lot of excitement in Gainesville because, let's face it, they have dominated Tennessee for a long time. And, you know, they were telling me in 2015 that they felt bad for us as we were leaving the Swamp after Butch Jones forgot how to go for two, went up 12 points in the fourth quarter. And they were like, hey, you know, we feel bad for you guys. We wish you would be back on top. We wish it would be fun again. So that was 6 years ago. We've only gotten much, much worse in those last 6 years. So I can't imagine that Florida fans really give much of a damn about this game.
Just objectively, and maybe you can't do this objectively, but what do you think of Dan Mullen? Because he drives me insane, and I have no rooting interest in any of this.
I resent that comment, Buck. I'm a professional. I can be objective. I wanted Tennessee to hire Dan Mullen in, you know, 2017. Like all of the 2016/17 offseason, I was telling everyone that would listen that Tennessee should go try to hire Dan Mullen from Mississippi State. To the point, really, at SEC Media Days, I haven't talked about this. John Adams, a longtime columnist in Knoxville, overheard me talking about it and then went back and wrote a column like the week later and said he had never thought of that before. He had told me that. He stole my idea. So just to set the scene, I am a Dan Mullen fan. Do I think he's a little corny? Yeah, he is. But I think he's a hell of a football coach.
No,
he's really good.
I'm totally with that. Hey, do we need to smoke this John Adams individual out? I'm so down to do that. We will publicly shame him on these airwaves.
You know, it was 4 or 5 years ago, but I'll never forget it. I got another guy I need to pick a bone with, too, if you got a platform, because I don't know if you saw, Buck, I used to do those farm videos, you know, rant and go out in the country on the farm and do those hype videos.
No, that's where I first fell in love with you.
Right. So I was in a restaurant one time, and local congressman Tim Burchett came up to me and was like, hey, those are brilliant. You're doing a good job building a following. And guess what happened next election cycle? Next thing you saw, he's walking out in his Carhartt in front of animals. Now he's the all-shucks good old boy in a Carhartt. Completely ripped off that, too. He wrote it all the way to Washington, D.C.
Hey, you screwed up, Reed, because he's got the line at the end that does it all every time. Thank you for sending me here. You blew
good line.
That could have been your line. Unbelievable. All right, we're fighting with congressmen. We're fighting with Knoxville columnists, all on behalf of King John Reed of Fox Sports Knoxville, who joins us each Friday on 104.5 The Zone. Go ahead, Lucas.
Dan Mullen really is that coach that you just truly don't understand how he's able to get into a recruit's home and convince them to come play for him, but then you see what happens on the field, and it's impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think he struggles with that. So, like, it's not even like he's recruiting at a high level. Like, I think he is propped up by being at Florida. So, like, when you're in the state of Florida, and let's face it, when your in-state competition is as bad as Miami and Florida State have been for so long, you're still able to get, you know, most of the best players in Florida. You know, you go up to Georgia, get what you need. And I think that's really helped keep Dan Mullen at least with top 10, top 15 recruiting classes. And he's just really, really good at X's and O's, man. Like, he is one of the best offensive minds in the country.
Who worries you more, Anthony Richardson or Emory Jones?
Well, here's what's going to happen, Lucas. Like,
well,
Emory Jones is
going to
come out.
I just want you to tell us.
He's going to crash back down to earth. He looked good against Alabama. He is not going to look good on Saturday. I think Tennessee might even be up to an early lead. Tennessee might get out to a 10-7 lead, a 10-3 lead.
Seen that before.
The fans are going to be booing Emory Jones, and then they're finally going to put Anthony Richardson in, and he is going to have his coming out party, and he's going to run all over the place and beat Tennessee. Who am I more worried about? I'm much, much more worried about Anthony Richardson. I already know what's going to happen with Emory Jones. He's not going to look very good.
The quarterbacks obviously make that running attack so dangerous, and you saw what kind of hell it gave Alabama on Saturday last week. What do you expect their approach to be? How do you think do you think Tim Banks has the horses to even try and contain this thing up front?
I mean, I guess you just have to, like, stop the run, right? I mean, that's all Florida was doing, was just short passes across the middle and running. So, like, if you're Tennessee, you just have to try to load the box and try to stop that. And if Emory Jones can beat you down the field, let that happen. I don't know if you saw, but coming out of the Tennessee Tech game, Tennessee, number one ranked secondary,
lockdown, right.
No fly zone. We got the horses. Just play man coverage. Load the box.
Hey, two touchdowns to 5 interceptions through 3 games for Emory Jones.
Yeah, that's fine. But I think if you're Tennessee, like, we know, Lucas, that he is not a good passer. Like, the stats can say whatever they want, but if you're Tennessee, the only chance you have is stopping the run game, because they're running down Alabama's throat. And I get that Alabama has gone a different route and they play more offense than defense these days, but, you know, they're still got better athletes on their field on defense than Tennessee does.
Reed, you've known Lucas and you've worked with Lucas longer than I have, which may come as a surprise to the Nashville audience. But I've been shocked to see the kind of transformation that he's undergone behind the glass in there during the course of football season. He's spitting with rage at Shane Beamer, calling him a whiner. He's getting excited because the offense with Tennessee is using tight ends, and he's losing control of his emotions back there. I fear for his sanity and, frankly, for yours come Sunday morning after the result of this game.
No. See, that's the difference. I'm a little bit older than Lucas, or quite a bit older, actually. So I know what's coming. I don't really have any optimism. Lucas, it's impressive that he has optimism because he can't have seen more than four Tennessee wins all time against Florida. Like,
I've literally seen one. I've seen one.
Okay. And how long?
It was 2005. Like, I was not conscious to Tennessee football enough in 2004 to enjoy that win. It was 2016.
Well, that's what I'm saying. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, how many years have you followed? At least it's like, what, 07, 08? So
05 was probably the first season that I was fully in for the first time.
It's gross. I can't get him to put the needle down, Reed.
It's sickening. Sometimes you just have to have an intervention with these guys.
Hey, I'm going to wake up Sunday. I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to come in for my Titans radio scoreboard, put on a face. I'll be fine.
And until I see him Monday, and then he's my problem to deal with. John Reed. You can check out the Reed's Ranch podcast. You can follow him, John_Reed, on social media. His radio show in Knoxville, Talk Sports, begins directly after his visit here. Buddy, I appreciate the time, and I will keep you in my thoughts and in my prayers over the course of this weekend. Godspeed.
You're not hearing me, Buck. You don't have to pray for me. I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. Pray for Lucas.
No, because I hear the desperation in your voice. I hear you trying to convince yourself as much as you're trying to convince me. Reed, I identify this behavior. You are as much an addict as he is.
No, what you're hearing me is me freaking out because I'm trying to drive to a remote in Pigeon Forge, and somehow my GPS took me into a trailer park, and I got 15 minutes to get there. And I don't know where the hell I'm going. That's what you hear.
All right, get off the phone.
About Tennessee.
Get off the phone and go to your radio show. I'll talk to you later.
I got to go. Love you, boys.
What is he doing in Pigeon Forge?
That's why he was cutting out. You can tell he was cutting
he's
out.
He's driving through the boonies.
The mountains.
Oh, my God. They're doing a remote at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Gatlinburg or whatever.
They might be.
God almighty. That's hilarious. John Reed is among my favorite human beings. I love that he comes on the show every Friday to talk about the Vols. I don't believe him that he's not going to be emotionally affected by what is potentially another loss to Florida, no matter how it looks. But here's my question, right? Because I don't want to do doom and gloom radio with Tennessee just because it's Florida and just because they're big favorites at home. I don't think that's the best way to analyze this game. Not because I'm trying to, you know, coddle Vols fans, but because I think you need to look for legitimate growth now that SEC play is finally upon you. And you can look and learn things about the quarterback situation against a legitimate opponent. Not that Pitt wasn't. I think that Pitt's better than you, but Pitt keeps losing and their defense looks awful. So I'm now starting to question how much better Pitt actually was. And again, there were missed opportunities against an opponent that's probably on an even playing field than you are. So I'm looking at this upcoming game on Saturday, and I understand what Reed's saying. You know, you'll feel better about your odds going into Missouri week. You'll be able to rebuild your confidence and keep things on track once you get through this game. But in this game, in a hostile environment, in the first time or in the first season post-COVID where there will be full-throat fans in the swamp, how do you see the operation of the offense handle itself depending on who's under center? So the question for the audience is this. Who gives you a better chance? Not just a chance to be competitive, but who gives you a better chance in this game tomorrow at Florida? Is it Hendon Hooker or is it Joe Milton? I'm legitimately curious because I think it's a much closer choice than people would have probably thought it was a couple of weeks ago after we saw Hendon Hooker against Tennessee Tech. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. Who gives you the best shot at Florida this weekend? Hendon Hooker or Joe Milton? We'll talk about it coming up next. You'll hear from Josh Heupel in the way that he's kind of taken or at least informed the media of their process with the quarterbacks throughout the course of the last couple of days. We'll do that on the other side. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. I'm so pissed at Lucas. I swear to God. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock, talking Vols and the Gators ahead of tomorrow night's primetime matchup. So I'm doing a lot of day drinking tomorrow to mentally prepare myself for this. I'm going to spend a lot of time at a winery, you know, in between cheese boards and stuffing my face. There's going to be a lot of vino drank to prepare for this particular outing. Do you want to tell the people what you said to me during the commercial break and why I'm upset with you?
Okay. I said back in the day, people used to gather to watch public executions.
And why do you think I'm upset with you?
Because I didn't say it on the air.
Why are you so much funnier when we're not doing the show?
I have no answer for this. You asked me what time the game was.
And that's the result of my inquiry about simply what time the game is being played.
Yes, it's prime time, baby.
People used to gather for public executions. That is such a perfect line.
No, it's very self-deprecating. I do think this has the potential, if things go right for Tennessee, it's just to make it a four-quarter game. That's the baseline. That's all they need to go in with the mentality with. Make it a game on the road in the fourth quarter. It just depends on which quarterback allows them to do that.
Yeah, so which quarterback gives them the best chance to win? Or at least the best chance to compete. I think it shouldn't be two different things. I want whoever they start at quarterback, and it sounds like Josh Heupel. In fact, before we go to the phones, let's hear from Josh Heupel, because he's kind of had an evolving position on this throughout the course of the week. This is from Channel 6 in Knoxville, I believe, courtesy of Channel 6 in Knoxville. Josh Heupel's press conferences and comments about the quarterback.
Is healthy? Is he your starter, or do you have a quarterback competition this week?
I never speak in hypotheticals. Got a little bit of work last week. We'll find out where he is in particular, Tuesday, Wednesday here, and see where we're at that point as far as whether he'll be able to play or not.
Don't have an update on the quarterback status right now. Joe's gotten some work here during the course of the week. We'll find out more tomorrow with him, but some of the other guys that maybe you didn't see last week. Anticipate most of those guys being able to play, though, when we get down to Gainesville.
Has there been any thought into playing more than one quarterback in a game?
No, right now we're not leaning that way.
So they're not leaning that way ahead of Florida, not playing two quarterbacks, so it's likely that who they ride with at the start will be their guy at the end, unless it's a blowout and you want to get Harrison Bailey some snaps and try and salvage whatever the hell that is, because that seems to be a situation where he's clearly third on the depth chart. But who gives you the best shot at Dan Mullen and the Gators? It shouldn't be who gives you the chance to be the most competitive. It should be one thought process simply. Who gives you the best opportunity to try and cause an upset? And I know we've made some jokes about that. We know how unlikely that probability is, but that's what you're going into this game trying to learn about your football team. Can they have the mental toughness? Can they survive what will be a pretty daunting task with the second best team in the country? Can you handle yourselves in this moment and find ways to operate, to execute, and to push a team that's clearly better than you at this point? Who gives you the opportunity to do that between Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton? 615-737-1045. Let's go to Greg, who's in Coopertown. He wants to weigh in on the quarterback situation. What's up, Greg?
Can you hear me?
Sure can, buddy.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're on the air.
Hello.
Can you not?
Man, I can't hardly hear you. I got you now.
Okay, go ahead, Greg.
It's got to be Hooker, man. Seriously.
Why?
Gosh, he's just so much more accurate, and it looks like he can read your defenses a lot better.
And I think, Greg, appreciate the call, 615-737-1045. I think that my biggest observation about Joe Milton when he was playing is that I did think he wasn't putting them in positions. Like, he wasn't bad at reading the defense. He just started to take more of what the defense was allowing him to take and not trying for the long ball every time, focusing on more of those in-breaking routes. I thought he played a better game against Pittsburgh until he ended up getting hurt, as far as not putting them in costly positions. You know, with Hooker, he seems to have the ability to kind of recognize his running lanes more and to see what the defense is going to give him as far as that's concerned when they're playing in zone and those rushing lanes open up because he's sitting back and he's trying to maneuver the defense, the secondary specifically, with his eyes and with their progressions. But I would say to you that I don't know if there's that big of a difference. Am I off base on that? Like, I don't think just watching these two so far, and again, the one game of Hooker is Tennessee Tech, so I have to grade it on that scale, but you can only play the opponent that's in front of you. So I would say that the recognition of defenses is not necessarily where I see Milton struggle.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Hooker's attempted twice as many passes at this point as Joe Milton has.
Yeah.
Because he got that full game and played a whole half against Pittsburgh. But I agree with you. I didn't think Hooker did anything to separate himself. You can make a pros-cons list, right? Like Hooker, maybe a better runner, a little more fluid, doesn't take care of the ball as well as you would like. Milton, you couldn't really pin that against him, though it's a smaller sample size. So I don't think there's a lot of separation.
I think that's people projecting what they want Hendon Hooker to be. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Steve, who's in Nashville and wants to weigh in. What's up, Steve?
Guys, thanks for taking my call. I think Hooker is a really good quarterback. He really is. I think that Tennessee will be down 14-0, and they're going to need something special. And they're going to have to take a risk and go with Joe, because when you have an arm like that that can put that thing all over the lot and have the thrill of a big play, if he ends up making one or two of those throws, it can really make the game interesting. I like both quarterbacks, but I think they're going to need something special. I think Milton is going to be the one to offer that this weekend, even though Hooker is a good quarterback. But I think they're going to be down. And I think Richardson is probably playing for Florida this week too. So that's going to really make them have to push the envelope a little bit on offense.
Thanks for the call, Steve. 615-737-1045. So I don't know that Hendon Hooker's a great quarterback, the way that Steve's kind of made. I don't think either of these guys are great.
And Hooker is who he is. He's a grad transfer. It's his last year of college football.
This is what he's looking at in his final form, right? This is who Hendon Hooker is. This is not a developmental situation. You can increase your comfort level with what the coaching staff is asking you to do and with what, you know, just your general ease of operation as you play more reps in this offense. But I don't consider him to be a great quarterback or like an overwhelmingly good quarterback. I think that he's functional. I think that's kind of the way that I'm looking at Hendon Hooker. Can he be functional enough, though, to provide you the best opportunities to keep in this game and to keep, you know, frankly, to keep Florida off the field? If you can utilize what Josh Heupel's offense is predicated on, the rushing attack, if you can use that to just basically play ball control, I do think that it allows you the opportunity to limit their opportunities, but you have to be able to capitalize on your own, right? That's why I fear Joe Milton. Because if that's going to be the game plan, and normally I'm not interested in a conservative football game, all right? I like points, I like touchdowns, I like big passing plays through the air. But I like the quarterback to hit the big passing plays through the air.
And that's not the style of this offense, though. Ball control, time of possession.
No, you're going hurry up. You're going there. There's a lot of quick three and outs in there, but you're trying to keep your opponent on your toes. So it would divert from what Josh Heupel is wanting to do. I would just say, from my standpoint, I think that there has to be a reasonable expectation of who your opponent is and what gives you the best chance to win. Does that style of play need to basically transcend no matter who the opponent is? You know what I'm saying? Like, I want them to be able to be fluid with that, even if it goes against what their bread and butter is as a coaching staff. They have to be able to adjust to that. No, that just sounds ridiculous to me that that's the approach that they would take, that they're going to try and outgun Florida. It seems like a fool's errand. No, put yourself in a chance to succeed.
I mean, tempo is what Heupel has in his back pocket. That's his style of offense. He's not going to go away from that. That's just what they're going to do. It's going to have to be efficiency. That's the way Tennessee beats Florida.
But if you can't trust the efficiency, don't you have to adjust the tempo? Because tempo doesn't outright win you a football game. It can be an advantage, of course. But that's what I'm looking for out of Josh Heupel. I want to know that he can be adaptable. I understand what it is that makes him Josh Heupel, what it is that makes that staff and that offense what they want to run. I get that. Can you not have any flexibility?
That's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing about preparing for Tennessee is preparing for the tempo. That they're going to have to ride that all season and throughout the Josh Heupel era. There can be tweaks, but they're never going to shift to a line of scrimmage, control the ball, grind out 7-minute drives type of offense. It has to be a big play, quick hit, get 90 plays through four quarters offense. He's going to live or die on that.
There's no evidence to dispute that notion. This is just wishful thinking on my part. 615-737-1045. Let's go to David in the borough who wants to chime in. What's up, David?
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call. So just to what you're talking about, the efficiency, to get that efficiency that you're alluding to, you got to have some positive yardage and completions. Heck no, there's not going to be a deep ball threat from our Vols this weekend. I'm sorry. We've seen that in the Pitt game, and to Steve's, the previous caller, the deep ball, listen, we can talk all day about the two that could have been there. Let's talk about the five or six he overthrew to begin with that could have won them that game possibly. There's just there's nothing there to be gained from the deep ball. So what you got to have is the short yardage passing plays to be completed and gain those couple yards and rely on your running to get you the first downs. Got to have positivity to get that efficiency, but no, between the two quarterbacks, I think you got to go with Hendon Hooker for that efficiency. If you want efficiency, you got to go that route. If you go with Milton, he's going to try to throw it deep, and if he tries to throw it deep, we're going to get a repeat of what we've seen from the Pitt game, and I don't think that's what we need in this game. If we throw it deep like that and we give up those, you know, basically give up those downs, you're shooting yourself in the foot for any type of efficiency, and the tempo goes straight down the drain when you don't have that efficiency. So that's my hot take for the day. I think you go Hendon Hooker for the efficiency side and try to keep that tempo by having positive yardage plays for your efficiency side that you guys are alluding to. So that's my take.
Hey, David, I don't think it's a hot take. I think it's a nuanced opinion. I'm inclined to lean that way myself. We'll continue this conversation coming up next. I want to dive into this a little bit more because I think what Lucas brings up is interesting. The style of play being the thing that's Tennessee's best asset right now. The thing that we're discussing makes Tennessee difficult to prepare for is that you're simply going to have to keep pace with them. But what the caller brings up, I think, plays into that same notion. So we'll talk about it coming up next. Who do you think gives the Vols the best shot at Florida tomorrow in the Swamp, primetime, ESPN? We'll talk about it coming up next. Don't forget, Chris Sanders, former Titans and Oilers great at 11:20. Coach Dave McGinnis at 12:20. A lot of Titans and Vols to talk about over the rest of the show. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.